In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, good afternoon on a Wednesday. A little cloudy, a little chilly. Did Dave Murray just say like 14 degrees on Thursday?
Yeah, I think that's
Friday?
What I heard.
Oh, my goodness. Annie just left the studio and she had her big, it's called a parka. Did you say like a North Face parka? I have this, I love this because I love the Alpine Shop. They're off of Lindbergh in Kirkwood. Sue, are you there, by the way? We should say hi to Sue, because she's not here today.
There you go. Yeah.
I used to...
That's Kirkwood Road to those who live there.
Well, because it's downtown Kirkwood, right?
Right.
So that place is so damn expensive, but I love it. And I used to do ads for them years ago, and I would do my ads. I'd trade with them. Sometimes we do that. Like, so I just did the ads, and I'm like, hey, give me some trade. And I bought so much like North Face, and I have this Marmot jacket that's just unbelievable. And it's like 12 years old, but it's still good. You know, the technology lasts a long time. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because she was all parked up as she left the studio. Fred also asked me if I watched the Mizzou game last night, the basketball game. I did. They played Notre Dame. It was kind of a tale of two halves.
Yeah.
They blew it at the end of the first half. Well, listen what happened. So we're just starting to get to know this Mizzou team. And I liked what I saw last night. Okay, but here's what happened at the end of the first half. They had a 12-point lead, and it went down to a 7-point lead in like 15 seconds. Ew. And then they blanked the bed in the second half, and they lost. They should have won that game. They were tied with seconds to go,
right,
and Notre Dame gets the home victory. But you know what? That team is going to be good. I really liked what I saw and what I've seen so far. And again, they're kind of getting to know one another and figuring out how to play. I think they play KU this weekend. Ethan, do you know? It's coming up here.
Holy cow. That's
I don't know, but
game.
I can find out very quickly.
But you know what? KU's not as good as they usually are.
Oh, right.
Not at all. In fact, I think they might have lost last night.
Yeah, I don't think that they're ranked.
Right. Though they were ranked, but not barely. They were like 24th, okay, but they might have dropped out. So, yeah. Well, anyway, Mizzou basketball. You know, the Bragging Rights game is coming up in a few weeks as well. I think that's on the 22nd, and I'm going to try to go this year to that. All right. Well, we got a lot to cover. We have Josh Krasauer from Washington coming up at 3:18. We're going to talk with Ryan Kroll. I mentioned this story a couple of days ago. He's a reporter at St. Louis Magazine, and he wrote about this crazy story in Ladue with the cops there busting a ring of what they call crime tourists. And it's really kind of an interesting story. I ran it down a little bit the other night. He's going to join us. We have Bachyangar Sargon this afternoon in the 5 o'clock hour, State Senator Nick Schorr, and a whole lot of other stuff as well. Now, we had a special election in Tennessee last night. Congressman Mark Green decided to go to the private sector. So he gets out, so they have a special election. There's buildup, of course, because, you know, we just had all these elections a few weeks ago, and the Republicans did not fare as well as expected. You know, I certainly think, and I said at the time, these were blue states that we were losing in. The margins were significant. Do you kind of read the tea leaves there for next year? I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But in this case, it's very funny because there's been this buildup for the last, you know, couple of weeks, really just since Thanksgiving, because now this is the political story. You have a special election with a progressive running for the Democrats and a Republican who's in trouble. The polling is really tight. This is clearly a sign that the Republicans are in trouble. So here's Afton Bain. She was the Democrat.
I think all of those people are going to start working campaigns. They're going to start running for office. And we're going to see just the cavalry come in for to restore democracy in our state. We had Raisin. We had more volunteers. We knocked more doors. And I think there, you know, the Republican supermajority's time is coming.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she did so well. She got her ass kicked by 10 points last night. Now, look, this is what you see in the Washington Post. This is where the media will lead you astray. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there aren't warning signs for Republicans heading into the midterms, because of course there are. And there always are going to be for the opposing party, right? There's going to be an advantage in the midterms. It's just historic. But here's a couple of accounts of the Tennessee race from today. The Washington Post: surprisingly tough Tennessee election reveals House GOP has a base problem. What? Are you kidding me? Republicans face a dire predicament heading into the midterm year, with independent voters breaking away from President Trump and a conservative base losing faith in the GOP majorities. That point, this is my favorite line, that point was driven home by the surprisingly difficult effort it took to eke out a win in a Tuesday special election in a conservative district. Really? 9 points?
9 points.
9 points is not eking out a win. It wasn't even close. The polling was way, way off on this. Here's another one. This is from Politico. GOP frets dangerous result in Tennessee. Republicans are worried the slim margin of victory in Tuesday's special election may spell doom in 2026. I think I need this when I'm talking. I had the wrong mouse. Darn it. Let me say that again. We'll spell doom. Still can't get the mouse to work. What's going on
here? One more time.
Okay, thank you for being patient with me.
Yes, of course.
It spells doom in 2026. Now, I'm just a guy who talks on the radio about politics and have been doing this for 30 years. And Sue, I'm going to test this theory out with you and maybe Fred and maybe the audience this afternoon as well. And it's not a real tough question, so don't feel intimidated by this.
Okay.
But would you feel that there's any difference whatsoever? I mean, any difference whatsoever in an election that is on the first Tuesday of November, like when a presidential election is, right? When people turn out, right? Compared to December 2nd in Tennessee. Any different? You think the electorate would treat those elections a little differently? I think maybe more people would go to a congressional midterm election or a presidential election and probably skip out on the special election in Tennessee on December 2nd?
It's entirely possible.
It's not entirely possible. It's exactly what happened. It's ridiculous to even compare what happened in Tennessee with what might happen next year. And by the way, here's one thing I know for sure. If this Democrat crazy person would have won, it would have been all over the New York Times, the LA Times, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, you name it. But when I went to all my sources this morning, all those ridiculous papers that I pay for, you had to search to find the results of what happened with Matt Van Epps.
Oh.
You didn't know about that. And even in the column that I just read, did you notice they didn't mention his name? They didn't mention Matt Van Epps. They just wanted to focus on Republicans and the problems that they're going to have next year. Well, here's Congressman, soon to be Congressman Van Epps.
We have planted the flag and we are moving forward. We're going to take this momentum forward and we're going to win in 2026. We're going to hold the House and we're going to have more resounding victories.
So, look, can the Republicans lose the House next year? Yeah, it's quite possible. But let's not forget what the headlines were a month ago. Oh, the Republicans, they're in big trouble. Look what happened. Look at the margins in these blue states. And they were bigger margins. And this was a district in Tennessee that President Trump won by 22 points. But when President Trump is on the ballot, it's different. He brings people out. Well, that's what the Democrats are going to say. Well, he's not going to be on the ballot next year. He can support and endorse, and he did with Matt Van Epps, and it seems to have worked. And 9 points is not eking out. That is not eking out at all. So we'll test that with Josh Krasauer here in a couple of minutes and see what he has to say. But it's just hilarious, some of the coverage of some of this stuff. Same thing with the strike on the drug boat. So let me get to that. Because, and I like Rand Paul generally because he's a libertarian conservative. I consider myself a little bit more on the libertarian conservative side on the spectrum. Rand Paul feels very strongly that this strike that was ordered on this drug boat with survivors after the first strike, you know, you got a second strike. That's what the narrative has been. Pete Hegseth says, no, I didn't order, you know, two people to be killed because they were hanging off the boat. But Rand Paul says this.
I frankly think it's absolutely illegal. Their latest explanation is they weren't blowing up the people.
They were blowing up the boat. If those darn people just wouldn't cling to the wreckage, they would be fine.
Well, that's not exactly what people are saying. And I think that, you know, Senator Paul is misrepresenting the situation. I'll get to that here in a second. But here's the difference of opinion with Jack Keane, General Jack Keane.
In this case, the boat and the cargo needed to be destroyed and the terrorists eliminated. And given the fact the terrorists weren't eliminated, it's well within that commander's authority to finish and eliminate the mission that he was assigned.
Later on in the 5 o'clock hour, Bachyangir Sargon is going to be here. She's one of my favorites. She is one of the people I call a reform liberal because she certainly didn't used to be someone who was on the side of any of the Republican issues. She's got a new show on News Nation, which is called Batya, and she writes for the Free Press. She's been a regular on this show for a long time. She was on CNN a couple of nights ago and talked about this. This may have been last night, but one of the last two nights they talked about it on the second strike topic.
But what I don't understand is, it is the Secretary of State's right to determine who is a terrorist and who isn't. The Secretary of State answers to the executive branch. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has determined that these boats are carrying terrorists, which makes the attacks on them legal. And the only question is whether that boat was disabled or whether it was destroyed. If it was destroyed, how were there still live people clinging to it? And if it was only disabled, let me just finish the point, then it was still a threat, meaning it was still a legitimate target. So I'm very confused. And by the way, I've spoken to a lot of veterans today who are also very confused by all of this bipartisan outrage.
It's just ridiculous. And then, you know, you want to look at what the media is doing right now with what happened with the National Guard attack. I just retweeted this from Drew Holden, who is out there on Twitter, and he's the guy that started. Well, man, what did he do? He may have been the person behind Threads, but I know him for a different reason, for a different site that he started. Anyway, he was pointing out that you have NPR, The New York Times, ABC, The Washington Post willing to invest this month's energy to cultivate sympathy for the terrorists who shot two members of the National Guard last week and simultaneously demeaning the death of Sarah Beckstrom and the serious injury of Andrew Wolf by pushing preposterous partisan talking points. So Drew put together headlines from four different publications. Here's the New York Times. This poor woman was shot and assassinated by this guy that came halfway across the country. Here's the headline in the New York Times. For a shooting suspect, a long path of conflict from Afghanistan to America. Oh, there's a little empathy for him. Here's another one. NPR, Afghan suspect in D.C. National Guard attack appeared to suffer personal crisis. Oh, my goodness. We're so concerned. The Washington Post, Ramanullah Lakhanawa was once an elite counterterrorism fighter in Afghanistan, working along U.S. forces, but struggled to adapt to life in the U.S. after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. We're very worried about him. We don't care about the woman who was killed or the guy clinging to life. ABC News. As investigators continue to delve into what might have motivated the suspect, the deadly National Guardsman shooting last week, a portrait of life of increasing financial stress and a potential mental health crisis has emerged, sources tell ABC News. Are you kidding me? That's what they want to focus on in the legacy media. Complete embarrassment.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Hi, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We loved our margin of victory. It was a resounding win. I'm so grateful for the president's early and strong support. You know, and the president brought his entire political operation behind us, MAGA Inc., the full operation, and it propelled us to victory.
Yeah, that's Matt Van Epps. He won that special election in Tennessee, but of course, he just eked it out. That's what the Washington Post said. It was barely a win, even though it was 9 points. Josh Krossauer back with us, 97.1 Talk, political insider, the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. You see him on Fox all the time, and he analyzes politics on Fox Radio as well. Josh, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, great to be here once again and after another big election last night.
Well, look, my position is, and you know, I call balls and strikes pretty fairly. I get that there are some warning signs for the Republicans next year. There would be typically, historically anyway. But this race was supposed to be razor, slim. Trump wins 22 points in that particular district. So this guy only wins by 9 points. But I'm seeing in media reports that he barely won. That he, in the Washington Post, it said literally, he eked out a victory, Josh. I mean, come on.
Yeah, look, I think there are two things can be true at the same time. I mean, number one, the first election of a midterm when the president's party is up facing is going to face headwinds. It's going to face a challenge, and that's natural. In this specific race, there was a poll that came out showing the Republican only up by 2 points. And I think if you looked at some of the CNN coverage, some of the early night coverage in the mainstream media, there was an expectation that at the very least this was going to be a nail biter. Van Epps ended up winning by 9 points. So look, this is the Tennessee district that Trump won by 22 points. So a 9 point spread is not great. That said, the Democrats ran a pretty left wing candidate who was the AOC of Tennessee.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And that probably caught me. If you look at the district is an interesting amalgamation of Nashville, suburban Nashville, and then some rural counties across the state. The Democrat badly underperformed in the suburban part of the district in Williamson County. And if you look at her left-wing views and you would kind of extrapolate that out to what the midterm map could look like, it's also a warning sign for Democrats.
Yeah,
they
right.
dominate a bunch of Mamdanis and AOCs of Tennessee and Kentucky and all across the country. They're going to be toxic in the summer.
But at
so
the
that's
very
another warning sign.
And I agree. But at the very least, you have to be honest and recognize the difference between whether it was an election 5 weeks ago in November or the presidential election last year. Election on December 2nd is different. It's going to result in a different turnout model. There's no doubt.
Well, and then the other thing to keep in mind is that in this era of Trump, it used to be that the Republican voters would show up, college-educated Republicans, Chamber of Commerce types, would show up at every election. They'd lick their envelopes, they'd send out the voter mail, and they would be the ones who would be the most engaged no matter what time of year it is. In the Trump era, the Trump voters, Republican voters, increasingly only show up for election day, for presidential elections, and also for midterms. There's a higher turnout for midterms as well. That's actually going to be the big X factor. Like, they show up for Trump, but if Trump's not on the ballot, how is that going to play out? A special election, you're going to get the lowest turnout, and that's what we saw decent turnout, but it was lower than you see for a midterm and certainly a presidential.
All right, so much to talk to you about. Let me see if I can get through it all. The Pentagon and the second strike controversy. What do you make of this currently?
Well, number one, the White House and the Pentagon had trouble getting their story straight. That was one of the biggest question marks. When Trump first said he didn't know whether there was a second strike, Hegseth was sending out social media posts defending and bragging about the action taken off the coast of Venezuela. It looks like the Post may have kind of jumped ahead a little bit in terms of the facts.
A bit, yes.
And that's part of the problem. Like, one of the challenges this administration is having is communicating to the public, like what the mission is about, what the goals are, not just with these. I mean, clearly we're trying to prevent drug traffickers off the coast, but there's just not a lot of transparency throughout this whole operation. So, I mean, I think that's part of the challenge, that when you get a report like the Washington Post, the item in the Post last week, it certainly raised a lot of concern among leading Republican lawmakers. Roger Wicker, head of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Mike Rogers, House Armed Services. These are not people who are, these are red state Republicans.
No, that's true.
Hawks.
Right.
They care about national security, and they were raising red flags. So, I mean, that was what the story, not being consistent, transparent, and not getting the information out there, was a problem for the White House. Now, Hegseth seems to now say he knew, you know, he wasn't aware of the second strike. He didn't know that there were two survivors. If that's the case, then I think some of the more serious allegations, you know, he could be cleared of. But there's still a lot of smoke. There's still a lot of lack of clarity on exactly what Hegseth knew. And you know, he seems to be fingering a lower level person, one of his underlings, one of the admirals, who was the one who actually made the call.
I kind of just want to know the truth. And I don't know if in this era we can determine the truth, which is one of the significant problems with where we are with the media in this country. So on the Let me see if I can shift gears here to some other stuff, because, like I said, there's so much going on. Help me through this one here. This was a tweet last night from Elise Stefanik. Just more lies from the speaker. And true to form, the speaker, Elise Stefanik is a Republican in New York. And true to form, the speaker texted me yesterday claiming he knew nothing about it. Yeah, right. This is his preferred tactic, to tell members when he gets caught torpedoing the Republican agenda. It wasn't on your radar. This is, let's see, only... What does she say? The only provision is in the bill to root out the deep state rot. She goes on from there. But what the hell is going on? I texted a couple of local members of Congress and said, can't we all get along? And they said, nope, apparently not. So we have more Republican infighting with this?
Well, you got to realize that the relationship between Elise Stefanik and Mike Johnson has been fraught for a while now, and stems from the fact that when she was initially nominated to be Trump's UN ambassador, Mike Johnson wanted her to be stick around in the House because he needed every Republican vote, and she played a good soldier and played team ball, and then it turned out she wasn't going to get the job anyway. She didn't get nominated for the position, and I think she feels kind of double crossed by the speaker, and I think that that's leading to a lot of the disagreements and the things coming out in public. Usually these types of disagreements stay behind closed doors. She's making a big deal about them. She's also running for governor of New York. It's a blue state. I mean, it may not hurt for her politically to have some distance between herself and the House Speaker, but she just is in a little bit of a tough situation. She doesn't like the Speaker. She feels like she should be at the UN right now.
Yeah, right, right. I know there's interesting dynamics there.
And she's also, you know, look, I think she saw a big opportunity, and look, she could have a very good opportunity to run for governor against Kathy Hochul, who's quite vulnerable, but Donald Trump sort of pulled the rug out from under her just this past month, when Mamdani had that big photo op with Mamdani, and her whole campaign has been running against Mamdani and calling him a jihadist and a socialist. So, I mean, she's had a tough political run of it. I think she's frustrated, and I think a lot of her anger is at the speaker, who kind of hemmed her along when she wanted to be at the UN and be nominated for that position officially, and then she never got it.
Is Cash Patel in some trouble right now? He has some interesting reporting about what's happening at the FBI. Miranda Devine, who is, again, no lefty columnist, very aggressively reporting this. Cash Patel goes on with Laura Ingraham last night, denies a lot of these things, but there's this report that comes out from folks inside the FBI that, you know, indicate that things are just kind of too kooky and nutty, and that he's not doing his job and he's looking out for himself. Now, he denies that. You have insiders who could have political motivations, but what do you make of all that right now? And is he in trouble with Trump?
No, Miranda Devine is not the only column. Like a lot of people who cover the FBI, who report on what goes on in the national security agencies and FBI, you know, had a lot of concerns about Cash Patel even before he was confirmed for that position. And he is, you know, I think you can watch his performance on television and see how he's not quite as poised and professional at times, a little more, you know, lackadaisical, if you will, in some of his, you know, when he gives briefings and when he speaks publicly. And you also have Dan Bongino, who's also been under controversy. He's number two at the FBI. And, you know, this is not your...
I know. Look, I'm not... I wasn't... This is one of the appointments that I was not particularly fond of. And, you know, I want... I want the FBI to do well. But here's what's interesting, and I don't know the answer to this, and I'm confused by it. You probably know this, but you know, our Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, went to be kind of like third in command at the FBI, but he's never mentioned at all. So I don't know if he's the only guy that's doing work in there, but they never want to mention him at all. And he left here and has just been silent. You know, he was pretty active with the media. I got to know him very well, but nothing from Andrew.
Well, that's probably a good thing when you keep your head down, do the job. But Andrew Bailey is the kind of has the profile of someone who I think would make a quite competent FBI director.
Exactly.
And there's been a lot of whispering in Washington that he would be next in line if Donald Trump decided to replace Cash Patel. Now Trump has defended Patel. There's been no indication that Patel is on his way out the door, but there have been frustration that you hear from pretty high level folks when we do the reporting about what's going on.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I do believe that.
You hear it loud and clear. And I look, I think you can see, I mean, even like the case of the Charlie Kirk assassination when you know, it was the Utah governor who led the press briefing, and Cash Patel wasn't the person in front. I mean, he was there, but he just did not seem quite as prepared and quite as articulate as other officials who were briefing the public. There were a lot of mistakes made in that investigation and some other high-profile cases. The social media use by Patel, where he's released information that was inaccurate and not the kind of what you would expect for a disciplined FBI.
Well, that's why I sent you. I don't know if you saw this story.
You don't even need to hear them.
Did you see the story on Polymarkets that they did on 60 Minutes the other night?
I did not. CNN is now partnering up with Polymarket to do some of their political predictions.
I'm not, you know, I don't like the bias on CNN, but this was an Anderson Cooper story that was really well done. There was no politics. I would watch it. But the reason I bring it up is I texted Fred yesterday, or maybe it was Monday, and I said, I was joking, but maybe I should. I said, I'm going to put a little early money here on some very long odds that Andrew Bailey is going to be the next director of the FBI because of the way things are going. So maybe I need to find a place to place that Polymarket bet. Josh, I hope all is well. You have a great holiday. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Ah, DSW, Earth Place of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wednesday afternoon is when we spend a little time with our friend Alex Rich. He's going to visit in the 4 o'clock hour. I got a bunch of stuff to talk about. I don't know if anyone has heard about what happened with Mad Men. Mad Men was originally, of course, a Netflix show with Jon Hamm becoming a huge star here from St. Louis. It's one of the few shows, I think there are three, that I've watched completely in its entirety twice. Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and Better Call Saul, all three of those. And they went on to HBO the other night. It didn't go very well. There were some interesting technical glitches that are quite comedic, and I'll explain that after 4 o'clock. Sue will have a Wednesday edition of Sue's News as well. On Monday, I talked a little bit about this report in St. Louis Magazine, which is just crazy, about this ring of South American, they call them crime tourists. And Ryan Kroll, who is the reporter for St. Louis Magazine, who does a daily newsletter, who wrote that story, is with us this afternoon to explain a little bit more about it. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Good. This is a crazy story. And I had heard a little bit about this over the last year or so, just from some folks that lived in neighborhoods that were kind of adjacent to this. But this goes back to some weekends in June of 2023, right?
Exactly. And people were wondering why the story's coming out now. That's because these guys, they were just sentenced last month. So all the full case file became available. And I was really sort of interested in the kind of the police procedural portion of this, how they solved the crime. And that just became public in the last few weeks. So I was really eager to tell that story. And I'm happy that it, found interest with you.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So let's give a little background first and foremost on the crime itself and what happened. These were guys that were driving from Florida originally. They're staying in the area, but they're across the river. They're in Illinois. And then what do they do? What happens?
Yeah. So they came up from Florida on two consecutive weekends, really, quick trips in and out. But on three nights, they hit only four homes. But from those four homes, they stole almost $700,000 of jewelry and high-end designer goods.
Unbelievable. Like, really, really expensive watches. By the way, do you watch I just mentioned Jon Hamm. Do you watch Your Friends and Neighbors? Have you seen that show on Apple TV Plus?
I haven't seen it, but someone mentioned that to me about, and I guess he's like robbing his own neighbors.
Yeah,
right?
So he gets fired from his job, and he goes in, and he lives in the fanciest place with all the fancy people in the country club, and he goes in, and he just essentially steals really expensive watches from people who have so many expensive watches, they might not even notice that they're gone. But that's what this kind of reminded me of in a certain way, just because of the prices. You're talking about $50,000 Rolexes, right? A Chanel purse that was $12,000. All kinds of other jewelry. They took in $700,000 in jewelry and designer accessories in four burglaries. Is that the number that we have?
Yeah, exactly. And they weren't in these places very long at all. Like in Ladue, for instance, they were in and out in about 10 minutes, and they didn't even venture beyond the master bedroom and this, massive walk-in closet. And I guess one difference between them and Jon Hamm in terms of their MO is that these folks definitely noticed that their stuff was missing.
Yeah.
These guys left a mess. Like, I saw these crime scene photos, drawers were pulled out. They'd use screwdrivers to, get through locked cabinets and that kind of thing. They were quick, but they weren't very clean in the job. It was not ambiguous that this place had been burgled whenever folks got home.
This was all near Old Warson Country Club, right? And were people out of town? Were they like making sure they were watching these homes in advance and they kind of knew when people might be gone, or do we know that?
Yeah, so this is really fascinating. So because one of the vehicles they used was rented from Hertz, the Ladue police afterwards were able to basically know on a minute-by-minute basis where this car had been at the time of the burglaries. So they could watch the historical data, GPS data, and they saw the Chevy Suburban kind of tooling around this neighborhood earlier in the day, like around noon. Presumably, seeing who was home, who wasn't home, casing the neighborhood. There's some kind of quirky details. Then they went to the Home Depot, bought some stuff. They hit up like a McDonald's. They hit up a service. They hit up an Airbnb where they were staying just to chill for a little bit. Then they came back over around 9 p.m. and did the actual burglary. You're totally right. Make a little bit of an assumption there, but presumably they were kind of looking around that neighborhood, prowling to see, you know, what houses just had no activity whatsoever.
So your story says that they go back, they end up in Florida then, and they meet with a Venezuelan jeweler. Venezuela's been in the news a lot. And they get $35,000, which does not seem like a lot of money. And then they gave the handbags to the lady friends? That's interesting,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so these guys were... Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's hard to put a price on a good gift for your significant other. But, yeah, so that was just from one job. So that was from one house in Ladue. They stole $330,000 worth of stuff. And then, yeah, the handbags they just kind of gave away as, you know, freebies to their friends. And then, yeah, the jewels, the jewelry they sold for really about like one-tenth of what it's worth. And then they basically did the exact same thing the next weekend at different houses in Chesterfield and Frontenac. So that's where the term crime tourist comes.
Right,
like these
right.
guys, they had like the schedule of like a rock band, you know, like they were in Florida one night, St. Louis the next night, North Carolina, South Carolina, where else? Delaware for a while. And yeah, they were just kind of, their whole MO was they would get into like a locale and then get out right away. And the going back to that police procedural part of it, the police were eventually able to kind of figure out where all these guys had been because they had this one kid who was 20 years old. He was doing the driving and he was also booking all the Airbnbs. So they could just kind of look at this kid's, you know, Airbnb history and then, you know, compare that to where there had been break-ins nearby. And that was a big investigative tool.
Yeah, I love that. That's, you know, the police work. Ryan Kroll is here from St. Louis Magazine who wrote about this. Let's talk a little bit more about that because, look, these things could have happened without getting caught decades ago, but there are cameras everywhere, right? And so once they see that there's a van from one perspective, they say, oh, we got to see if another house has a different perspective. And then they start piecing these things together, right?
100%. Yeah. So it started with the security footage of the house that had been hit, but that just kind of let the cops know that from which direction the burglars had come. So then they started looking at cameras, you know, in the adjacent neighborhood, and they saw this really sketchy Chevy Suburban that was driving around at night with no lights on. But even that footage that didn't have the license plate of the Chevy Suburban, but then they could look at other cameras that are around town, around Ladue, that and like pull up that footage for around the time of the burglary. They found a Suburban that had a Florida plate. Then they were able to put it at the Home Depot, and then they could get the Home Depot security footage. So yeah, I mean, it was like a lot of sort of really sophisticated technology that was put to use, but also just like a lot of, you know, sweat equity on the part of the cops to, you know, go through all this footage and to like chase down surveillance footage at Home Depots, at the McDonald's I mentioned earlier, at the service station. And ultimately what kind of sealed the deal was they sent that security footage they collected from those businesses that these guys hit. They sent it to the Department of Homeland Security. And one of these guys, Vehar Caro, I think his name was, he had had his photo taken by DHS when he entered the country. And using, I guess, like some AI facial recognition stuff, they were able to match the surveillance footage to him. And then he soon thereafter was actually arrested in Florida on something else. And he happened to be with these two other guys at the time. So it all kind of ended up being tied up in a neat little bow.
They're not always the smartest, are they? Well, look, and then the sentencing was what? I mean, they didn't get the stiffest sentences here, did they?
Yeah, I'm always a little bit surprised. I cover a lot of trials. You can never really predict these how these things are going to go. But yeah, they got around the two older guys who actually did the breaking and entering. They got around, you know, 3.5-4 years. And then the younger guy I mentioned who was doing the driving and the Airbnb booking, he got a little bit over a year. And yeah, I think you mentioned they're all in the country illegally, so they're almost, you know, certainly going to be headed back to Venezuela and Chile whenever they finish completing their sentences.
Well, great reporting here. It sounds like you had a lot of fun with this too, kind of, you know, putting things together. This is the kind of story that sometimes Hollywood movies and television shows are made of. So I don't know that that's completely out of the question if someone gets a hold and reads this, because it's just kind of a crazy story. So congratulations on putting some good reporting together there at St. Louis Magazine. I really appreciate you coming on here tonight with me, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good talking to you.
Awesome. Take care. It's 3:43. Man, I love that story that Ryan shared from St. Louis Magazine. Really interesting and off the beaten path, which is something I'm looking for all the time, just different topics. I ran across something earlier today from a guy that I know that's out in Sacramento, California. His name is Mark Allen. He's a film critic, and we worked together for many years. And something I did not know is that 10 years ago, he was arrested for a DUI, and he put a post on Facebook that had his mugshot, and he really wrote an interesting post about, you know, that experience and what and how it changed him, I guess I would say. And he became friends with the cop who pulled him over. And there's all kinds of dynamics of that story. So I'm going to try to get Mark on here in the next couple of days to share that story. Let me go back to the Cash Patel situation real quick here. We were talking about this with Josh Krasauer. And just to update everyone, Miranda Devine, who I like quite a bit, and she's been a guest on my show, had some of this reporting in the New York Post about this report that came out. It's like a 115-page report that is compiled by anonymous internal sources that describes the FBI under Cash Patel as a rudderless ship, all effed up, slamming his professionalism, claiming he's spending too much time on social media, public relations. So Miranda's been talking about this for a few days. Cash goes on Laura's show on Fox last night. I'm going to play some of that. But let me explain what he's reacting to. So in this report, they talk about the day after Charlie Kirk was assassinated while speaking in Utah. Patel flies in. You might remember this because he was tweeting about this. He's like, I'm going in to, you know, lead the investigation. But this report says he would not disembark from the plane without an FBI raid jacket, right? So the quote is, Patel did not have his own FBI raid jacket with him and refused to step from the plane without wearing one. FBI agents who were working on the case, Charlie Kirk's case, had to stop and ask around to find an FBI raid jacket, a medium-sized one that would fit, and eventually Patel was given a jacket belonging to a female agent. However, according to the report, the FBI director complained that two areas on the upper sleeves did not have a Velcro patch attached and refused to leave the plane until those were patched, prompting agents to remove their own to loan to him. So that's very specific reporting there, right, by Miranda Devine. So he goes on Laura Ingraham's last night. He says this is just all false.
It's 100% false. As you know, look, Laura, sadly, I was at 9/11 at Ground Zero in New York City on 9/11 because I was a White House representative honoring those victims and their names being read. You are very familiar with that. Then we made the immediate decision after Charlie got shot in the neck to fly to Utah unexpectedly to lead the manhunt to find the perpetrator in less than 33 hours because the FBI cut video, put it out in a press conference, and these people are worried about what I was wearing and what patches I was wearing. I was honoring my men and women at the FBI. One of my agents handed me a jacket and said, hey, boss, you should probably wear this. We're going into the command center. I said I'd be honored to wear that.
All right, so what's the truth? I don't know. That sounds like a legitimate story. The reporting sounds like something, just knowing a little bit about Cash Patel, that certainly could have happened as well. Here's one of the issues, you know, and this is something I indicated earlier with the state of the American media. How do you know what's true? How do you believe the report? Because to his point, you know, one of the things that he said last night, and I was listening to this on my way home, is that these are James Comey-era people that, you know, hate President Trump. They hate me. They're just doing this for, you know, political purposes. And then he called out Congressman Eric Swalwell. I thought this was kind of funny, actually.
And then another one handed me the SWAT team badge of the unit that was protecting the area where Charlie was assassinated. I wore that with pride. These people can talk about my appearances all they want, but look at the results. The FBI, this FBI, my FBI, the one that Dan and I are building here under President Trump, is succeeding in ways that no FBI has ever done so before. So the institutionalists and the anonymous reporters from the SWAT DC bureaucracy are the ones we are crushing. And that's how I know we're winning. And if Eric Swalwell wants to come online and talk about what jacket size I wear, I'm happy to send him a women's medium so him and Fang Fang can go out again.
Okay, that was a pretty good line. I just don't know what to believe here because, as I indicated when we were talking with Josh Krasauer, Cash Patel, when you go down the list of people that were, you know, put into positions in this administration, I think for the most part, there were very good choices that were made. Now, obviously, Matt Gaetz was a choice that was made for different reasons, and that was a terrible choice. But with Cash Patel and Bongino in particular, I don't want this to become a clown show. And beyond Miranda Devine's reporting, there's some indications that it's become a clown show. Having said that, I think the media is going to always treat a situation like this very unfairly, especially because of Trump. Now, I mentioned Andrew Bailey earlier, and this is interesting to me because Andrew Bailey's having great success as the Missouri Attorney General. We became very close. I loved what he was doing in the office. A great little run here from Missouri Attorney Generals heading to Washington, as we know, with Josh Krasauer and Eric Schmidt. And then all of a sudden, and this kind of came out of nowhere, I certainly didn't see it coming, Andrew Bailey is offered the job as assistant FBI director, so sort of like third in command at the FBI. But ever since then, we haven't heard anything from Andrew Bailey. So my question is, and this is where I was joking a little bit earlier, if you find these polymarkets in... I mentioned the story. It really was an interesting story on CNN that Anderson Cooper did the other night. The polymarkets are places where you can bet on elections and things along those lines. And some people really made a lot of money. Like there was this one guy who picked J.D. Vance super early in the prediction market because he had a one-syllable name and he just thought he was going to be the guy. And he won hundreds of thousands of dollars. So my joke was kind of, and I'm not so sure this would be one of those things that if I say this right now, you guys listening are going to remember this and how brilliant I was. But if it doesn't happen, we'll never mention it again. I said to Fred, maybe I should place a small wager or maybe a large wager at very long odds, if possible, for Andrew Bailey to become the next director of the FBI. Look, what I'd like with the Justice Department after the clown show, and this is nothing against local agents, and I went through this amazing FBI class a few years ago. Sue did the same thing, and I got to know a lot about what they do and the challenges that law enforcement face. But the men and women that work for the FBI have to have strong leadership. And if Kash Patel is, you know, seeking publicity over doing the job, which, again, I'm not convinced that's 100% true, but I'm also not convinced that Miranda's reporting is false and that some of the stuff coming from inside the FBI isn't legitimate. So we're going to have to see. I guess President Trump will let us know in one way or the other if he's losing faith in Kash Patel.
Get more at 971talk.com.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.